Hey everybody, this week's episode of the Press Run Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Developments, the makers of the award-winning games Out of the Park Baseball, Franchise Hockey Manager, and MLB Manager. Right now, Out of the Park Baseball 18 and Franchise Hockey Manager 3 are both available on Steam and directly from the website, ootpdevelopments.com. And of course, MLB Manager 2017, which just had a big update with the Korean leagues, which has been asked for by a lot of our fans, is available on the iOS store and the Google store. For Android. And you know, a lot of people ask me, they ask me about what the best way is to jump into Out of the Park Baseball 18 and Franchise Hockey Manager 3 in particular. And with games being so big and in so many different directions, what I always say is, you know what, check out our live streams every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/OOTP Developments. The baseball community manager, TJ Lowerman, a.k.a. That Sports Gamer, does a live stream of Out of the Park Baseball 18 and MLB Manager. And every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, the Franchise Hockey Manager community manager, Adam Burnett, along with the producer of the game, Jeff Riddles, do a live stream. So that's every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. and then at 10 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/OOTP Developments. The community managers live stream the games. You get a lot of great information, a lot of cool ways to play the game, a lot of interesting stories being told, and of course, live interaction with the community. And even if you can't make the 9 p.m. or the 10 p.m. shows, that's fine. We always archive everything to our YouTube page, youtube.com/OOTP Developments. Go subscribe to it over there. Adam, TJ, Jeff do an amazing job, and it's a great way to experience the game and get an understanding of just some of the different things that you can do. So check them out every Wednesday night, twitch.tv/OOTP Developments. 9 p.m. Eastern is TJ doing the baseball, and 10 p.m. Eastern are Adam and Jeff doing the hockey. And also check them out on youtube.com/OOTP Developments. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome back. It's the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wheat-Eye, Pasta Padre. You know, it's that time of the year. It's only a matter of weeks until we get to E3, and that means there's some preemptive strikes in the form of advanced feature news that will be expanded upon later, cover announcements, and pre-order details for games that are upcoming. We're going to get into all the information that's come out on two of those games that will be highly anticipated releases late in the summer, plus a new game announcement, which is bringing a certain sport back to consoles. We'll get to all that in just a little bit. But first, let's check in with the guests this episode. First up, it's Rich Grisham, Out of the Park Developments, Hit the Pass. Rich, how you been, and what have you been playing in, you know, since we last talked last week?
I have been fantastic. Thank you, Brian. It's great to be here as always. And I've been playing a lot of great video games. I have continued to play the Forza Horizon 3 Hot Wheels expansion, which is tremendous fun and really interesting in that you are driving real world cars or Hot Wheels cars on Hot Wheels tracks.
Right.
And it's just different. I'm not saying it's different good or it's different bad. It's just different than racing in Forza Horizon 3 in the regular game and even in the Blizzard Mountain pack. And it's just crazy. And I love it. And it's unpredictable. It's somewhere, it's closer to Forza Horizon 3 than it is Mario Kart, but there's an element of it that adds a bit of over the topness that doesn't sort of exist in the more traditional Forza Horizon 3 modes.
You get loops, you get like raised turns and angled turns, and you get what, a Tyrannosaurus Rex that looks like it's going to just swallow you whole.
It doesn't just look like it will. It does. I have been bitten hard by that Tyrannosaurus Rex. It's over the top, but it's not so over the top. It's still sort of grounded in a bit of reality. It's just it's an interesting mix of those two things, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And so that's been a big part of what I've been playing. Of course, I continue to play MLB The Show. I am well into early June in my True 162. And I am well into July in my career. I'm doing much better in my franchise with the Mets than I am in my career as a second baseman in the Oakland A's organization. Road but I'm continuing show. To play through those. Yeah, road to the show. Mm-hmm. So I got those two things going on. And playing FIFA, playing a lot of FIFA. Because I played multiple years of Pro Evolution, and then when FIFA went into the vault a month or so ago, I have been playing a lot of that. And I had to I had to put it onto semi-pro because the input lag on the control is just so difficult for me on defense to make up for. I almost feel like I have to cheat. So I would just get killed on professional, which is where I play very comfortably on FIFA every year in the past, as well as on Pro Evolution. But, yeah, I had to back it down, and so now I'm winning a lot more. But I'm not winning, like, 4-0 or 5-0. I'm winning 1-0 or 2-1 or 2-0 or something as I continue to just try to figure out FIFA. You know, the transition to Frostbite was – the more I play it, you know, I think difficult for the core game, even though the external game or what you see continues to look and sound fantastic. But with all that said, I'm enjoying it. Like, I'm literally, I enjoy playing FIFA. It looks wonderful. I love the visuals. I love the Premier League legitimacy. I love all of that stuff. So that's what I've been playing.
All right. We've also got back Chris Millennium OS from Operation Sports. Chris, what you been up to lately?
What's going on? I've been having a lot of fun. Still playing some Nier Automata. I've gotten into Injustice 2, which released this week. Having a ton of fun with that. We've got a they've added guilds to it, and there's like this multiverse mode where you never really have to go online and get destroyed by the Justin Wongs of the world. So, like, you play the computer and you build up all this stuff and your guild does all these missions together and you get more gear. And it's just a cool way of focusing on the people that don't want to go online with the game. So I'm having a lot of fun with that. Got back into Hockey Ultimate Team on wow. NHL 17.
Okay.
Broke that back out. I'm enjoying it a lot more than I've enjoyed Ultimate Team in a while. So, and thinking about getting into Madden Ultimate Team, put it on for about an hour yesterday and had a lot of fun with it. So, might do some solos in that. Might even try to take it online, test my might.
It's funny you mentioned that because I pulled up. It was literally today. I hadn't played Madden Ultimate Team in a while. I did heavily for the first 3 months or so. But I hadn't played it in quite a while. And I turned it on and there... we always talk about how it starts to feel overwhelming, or it's overwhelming to people who are unfamiliar with the mode, or even sometimes people who are accustomed to it with all the content that comes out. And I go in and there's like 30 different sets and different programs that have rolled out, which I've somewhat covered actually over the months. But when you go back in there and you haven't been in and you look at it, you just, again, I look at it and I'm like, where do I even start? What would I want to do next? Where do I want to spend these coins? Where do I want, what sets do I want to do? And then if I get that player, it's going to screw up the chemistries that I currently have full on, and it just racks my brain. I'm like, I have no idea what I want to do with it at this point.
And it's the same thing. Like, I think a lot of Ultimate Teams are like that now. Like, NBA 2K, my team is, there's challenges, but like other than that, going through like domination, everything, it's very overwhelming on how many cards. I think the auction house is set up very poorly. I think. Even MLB this year, dude. MLB this year is, you can't tell where any of the missions are. You don't know when you complete them. You actually have to go into the missions to see if they're completed. Yeah. And like, I went into the missions the other day and I completed four missions and had no idea I completed them.
Yeah, I've had that.
I think it's a real issue that's coming up with the more content, which is always great. It's always great to have more content, especially, like I said, I've always fought for solo content, so you don't have to take it online if you don't want to. But with that content, you've got to have some kind of organization, which I think is lacking a little bit.
Yeah, totally agree on that. All right. So did you have more, Chris, or did we want
to? Oh, no. I play too many games to go over all of them. Let's just leave it at that.
All right. Well, you know, there's an exciting time, like I said, but most of the big stuff tends to hit in mid-June with E3 and now EA Play, but we are getting some early information from, let's start with EA Sports, and that's Madden NFL 18, which released a teaser trailer. We got the cover announcement of Tom Brady. We got the information on the special edition, which is called the GOAT Edition, which will go for $80 and has a bunch of extra, mostly Ultimate Team stuff. And then also a lot of feature news and gameplay related news, which is always interesting to get it this far in advance, because it's something they'll be able to go back into and show us more of in the coming weeks and months. But there's some big stuff. We kind of had a good idea that there was going to be a story mode that was confirmed through the trailer. Frostbite Engine, we knew that was going to make its debut in Madden 18. But then we got some other interesting stuff, and we'll get to that in a bit. Let's start with those first two, though. Frostbite Engine and a story mode, because we can look right to FIFA 17 to kind of get an idea of what to expect as far as how it's going to play its role, how they're going to play their roles in Madden. Frostbite Engine, even in the description here that EA released, it's about visuals. It's not going to overhaul the gameplay. It's about stunning stadium exteriors. They're calling it the most photorealistic game to date. Firework displays, player runouts, weather elements that will be all improved. And then Frostbite, of course, helps with the story mode. And as we saw in FIFA, it was all about Frostbite improving the visuals, the surroundings, and then helping to generate that story mode. And so in FIFA 17's story mode, what you had was a situation where you controlled a pre-built character and you took him through kind of his early days, even kind of child days, and then through up to and through your first season in the Premier League, and kind of the ups and downs faced along the way. I think that's probably a fair expectation for Madden. What you saw in the trailer was the character, presumably it'll be a pre-built character again, looking out at Lucas Oil Stadium, which is the site of the NFL scouting combine. So they're giving you a hint there of what to expect, but I'd like to hear from you guys, you know, what do you think as far as Frostbite Engine story mode, your expectations for what we're going to get out of it in Madden 18? Chris, you want to start?
Yeah, I think when you point to FIFA, that's a great comparison to what we're going to do. I don't think Frostbite reinvented FIFA in any way. I think it's going to take, like most games, you install a new feature, new engine like that, it normally takes 3 years to really flesh it out before you start seeing the total change. I do think it's going to have a gameplay update because Frostbite specifically has to deal with weather and it can deal with animations as well, but I don't think you get that in the first year. So this year, like you said, I think we're going to look at graphical upgrades, mostly cutscenes, maybe on the field, maybe making the players look a little more realistic, because while the faces are done, they do face models, they're still, I think they lack behind when it comes to like NBA 2K or even MLB to an extent, or well, FIFA for sure.
Yeah, I think it's somewhat of a prioritization there because you're usually not seeing, you know, they're wearing helmets.
Yeah,
so,
good point.
So it's not the most important thing. I think they want to get the faces right. They're not probably not too worried about head sizes and things of that nature.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, with that and the gameplay stuff that they seem to update it, it's a wait and see for me with the gameplay stuff. They can talk gameplay all they want without actually showing anything. Yeah. So, and I'm sure we'll get into that a little later too. Mm-hmm. But so pretty much everything they've announced is sounds really cool. The journey mode sounds really cool. I think we're pretty sure it's going to be a story mode like FIFA where it's one story.
Right.
Like you said, probably a created person. But I mean, I don't think story mode for Madden is a huge thing. I just don't think it was. It sounds weird to say that, but like when I was going through the community, even the OS community, and which tends to be a lot different than the actual regular Madden community, but even on Twitter, like the story mode wasn't a real like shocker for anybody. Everyone was like, "Oh yeah, story mode."
Mm-hmm.
They were all very much focused on Tom Brady's arm, what it looks like when he's pumping it or something, or something terrible like that.
His arm is too thin or something. So I'll provide a little data here. I put up a poll shortly after all this information went out on my website, got over 2,000 responses, and basically asking what of all this information, what's your favorite feature upgrade that we know about for Madden 18? And I know I would agree with you, Chris, that you don't get the sense there's a lot of excitement about a story mode out there right now, but maybe that's the type of consumer or what it, that gets excited about a certain feature at this point in the year, especially on Operation Sports, where it's a more hardcore crowd. They may not be that interested in story mode, or they want some other type of information 3 months in advance. But in the poll, story mode actually came in first place, over 33% of the vote, beating out Frostbite Engine, which had 29%. And we'll talk a little bit about the numbers on the remaining things later. But story mode, and it's funny, there's comments in the article, if story mode wins this, that's a joke. It shows you why Madden's in the state it is today. Things like that. Like, people were worried that story mode is going to take resources from other areas of the game that they feel are more important. That's understandable to an extent. But I think it's fair to say, based on the results of the poll and based on how FIFA 17, over 12 million people, they released this number just last week, over 12 million people tried the story mode in FIFA. And it's been popular in NBA 2K, certainly, that this is a big deal. It's just that it's Madden's kind of the last one to do it, right? MLB implemented some of those ideas along the way, but Madden's really kind of the pulling up the rear here as far as single-player career modes. Rich, how do you feel about, you played The Journey, or you played at least part of it. Does that translate to Madden, you think, that type of mode and that in the structure that they built it?
Oh, for sure. I think it's something that we have a tendency to dismiss, or not dismiss, that's not true, because we talk about it. I think we all have our own perspective, which is a very important one, which is deeply involved in the community of these kind of games. But I also have, like, just even in the last couple of days, in talking to a few kids who are my son's age, who love sports and who love video games, these are 9, 10, 11 year old kids, they love the story mode. Like, they all talk about who they got drafted by in NBA 2K, and who what soccer team that they're playing for. Like, it's a big gateway for kids that I never realized until very recently, because, like I said, I'm talking to my son's friends, a couple who came over, and they play video games at my place, because of course I'm the cool dad who's got the various consoles, which is a good thing to be, I guess. So anyway, that's one thing that really struck me with how the story mode of these games really struck a chord with these kids. And these kids are smart, but they're not football Madden smart. It asks a lot of you to play Madden. It's a very complex and difficult game, especially if you haven't played it regularly. So if you're 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, it can be pretty tough to get into it, even if you're someone who loves football. So I think that, for one reason, like, just being able to make Madden a broader experience to a younger crowd, which the story mode definitely does, I think is good.
Well, yeah, Rich, and I was just going to jump in and say I was actually going to go that direction also as far as story modes, which is that these video games are very complicated, whether it's NBA 2K, super complicated to pick up and play, Madden, complicated to pick up and play, all of them really, except for maybe baseball. But what happens is that when you're intimidated by that, when you maybe don't have a complete grasp of the mechanics or the sport itself, one of the best ways to learn is through the story modes, I think, because it kind of acts as a tutorial in a way. They've built them that way to do that. But also, you're controlling one player on the field, on the court, on the pitch, that you just only have to focus on the goals for that one player and your specific tasks and assignments, as opposed to worrying about what your CPU teammates are doing, running plays, passing, you know, immediately picking up the new player, controlling, you know, switching around, calling audibles, you know, all of that stuff that for us we have a decent grasp on because we've been playing for over a decade or two decades, whatever it is. And for others, though, that stuff is difficult. So I think a story mode kind of condenses everything into something that's easier to pick up and understand and succeed at.
Yes, the challenge is to make it fun. It's not nearly as difficult to make a soccer single-player mode or a baseball single-player mode or a basketball single-player mode fun. Because in basketball, if you got the ball, you can dribble it, you can shoot, you can pass, right? There's only five guys on the court. You're one of five. Mm-hmm. In soccer, you're running up and down the field, and if you know the ball comes to you, you can pass it or shoot it, right? You know, you've got some options. Yes, there's more people on the field. There's less action depending upon your position. And in baseball, you're either the pitcher or you're the hitter, right? Or occasionally the fielder. Mm-hmm. But it's a very focused experience. It's very, I think, much easier to make those experiences fun than it is in football. You can't possibly have a single player story mode that is fun if you're a left tackle, right? Or if you're, you know, a middle linebacker might be tough. Like football is much more difficult to, I think, make a single player experience fun on the field, so to speak. I would imagine they have to put you at either the quarterback or the running back or the wide receiver position, or maybe just make you a quarterback. I don't know.
The
challenge is to make it fun. And that's what'll be interesting to see what their approach is, because I don't know what it'll be.
I would think that's probably what they're going to do is a certain position or a few positions, because what these story modes have done is your progression, even in FIFA, everything is stat-based, basically. You have to, you know, score a goal or score a certain number of skill points in a match, or, you know, score a number of, you know, have a certain average of points to move up and road to the show, or not points, but, you know, great ERA, great save stats, whatever it is, great average to be promoted in MLB, or you know, you have to average a certain number of points in, and you know, you're judged on numerical achievements in these games, and you don't get that as a cornerback. You don't get that as a defensive tackle necessarily. Where you're going to be putting up those numbers is quarterback, potentially running back, I would think, and wide receivers. Not very active even on a lot of plays. They're not active on running plays, not getting thrown to on every passing play. So making that an engaging experience and then tying it into the story somehow is going to be difficult outside of a few positions.
Yeah, and even just the mechanics of being a running back. Like you have to – when do you actually pick up control? When they hand the ball to you, or do you have to press a button to collect the ball?
Oh, great. Fumbled handoffs, Rich.
Right. Or if you're a wide receiver, like what play, you know, how often are you actually going to get the opportunity to catch the ball? And then when you catch the ball, what is it? Is it just pressing a button when it comes to you? But do you have to wait, you know, two plays or five plays or nine plays until they throw it your direction? Like, I just think it's going to be really difficult to make it fun. Not the story mode. I'm sure they can come up with an interesting angle on who you are and your – and various things that happen to you, but just getting on the field, like it's good. Basically, it's going to be a series of mini games. And how do you create that series of mini games to make it fun? I'll be very interested to see what they do, because to me, that's a big challenge.
Well, and the good news is they already have something like that in the game that kind of goes the way. Remember MLB The Show? We were very happy they quote unquote lifted critical situations as play the moments. Well, Madden already has play the moments in the game. So if you could use a version of play the moments in positions that weren't quarterback, because I think everyone knows when you play the career mode in Madden now, if you're not playing quarterback, it's a tough experience to continue to go through. There were a lot of problems with if you're a cornerback, like they wouldn't just throw the ball at you. Once you got to a certain rating, quarterbacks just stopped throwing your way. And that's extremely boring. But imagine if you could be an offensive player a wide receiver or a tight end and only have plays that you knew were coming to you. Or if you were a defensive skill player and you only got like 5 or 6 plays a game, like fielding and MLB The Show, where you knew you were involved in that play, and that's how that story mode keeps going.
So did we see kind of the beginnings of that, Chris, you think, with the with those opening cinematic sequences the last couple of years in Madden? Like the one where they put you into situations like throw to this player, or you weren't actually interactive in this portion of it, but they had a guy block a kick, and just situational stuff where maybe they give you an assignment to do to make a big play, something of that nature on special teams, here, return this kick, try to return it for a touchdown, that kind of stuff. I mean, they kind of set up their own narrative-driven type sequences there. Whether that would work within the context of a story, I'm not sure.
Well, you know, we're also sort of assuming that they have to go with a on-field experience where it is you as a single player. You know, there's no rule that says you can't experience it, the story, as a single person, but play the game as you traditionally play Madden. And that's, you can choose to try to, you know, use your player or not use them or something like that, right? So we're assuming an approach based upon, you know, that's how sort of most games have done it. But Madden might take a different approach with it, which is another opportunity, which, again, sort of thinking about it, that might actually be the way to go, right? Is to have that single player story mode, but then when you're playing the game, you're sort of controlling Madden as you know. But that would conversely defeat the purpose a little bit of what we were talking about earlier, which is making it an easier way for non-experienced Madden players to play the game.
I would say that there, one indication that it is probably controlling a single player is that this is a bit into speculation, but it's based on retail listings, that it looks like we might be getting online team play returning, because it says that this Madden will have online of 2 to 6 players. So, you know, if they built out, I think they would almost simultaneously build out those type of experiences. If you're controlling a single player in the story mode, give you similar mechanics and similar camera, things of that nature for online team play. And also, what online team play used to be in Madden was you could pick certain positions, but you were restricted there. When you were in offense, you could have someone as quarterback, running back, and wide receiver, those type of things. So I wonder if they didn't build them out kind of right next to each other with that in mind, how they're going to make an experience engaging when you're controlling a single player.
Well, and to piggyback on that with talking about the online team play, Rex has actually started to respond to those comments on Twitter with a picture of 3 fingers up in the air.
Yeah.
So, like, why respond to it if it's not going to be in at this point?
Yeah. I think it's pretty safe to expect that at this point. And they would have shut it down by now since everyone's talking. There's a lot of people, you know, it was not a very heavily played mode. We know that. That's why it got dropped. But there is a passionate group of people out there. It's just a matter of making that an engaging way to play. I actually somewhat enjoyed it, but lost interest with it at the time, I remember, within the first year or two, and then didn't really bother with it after that. I can kind of see it, but they didn't really put resources into making it very good after that initial launch of the mode. So let's talk a little more gameplay then. There's 3 things to note here. Target passing, which, you know, we don't know a lot about this stuff, so I'm just putting that out there first. But target passing says, for the first time ever, you're no longer tied to throwing at your open wide receiver. You can throw to who you want in the exact spot on the field with target passing, giving you ultimate control over where the ball is thrown. So that sounds like you can throw to a spot instead of just trying to lead the receiver or throw low to the receiver or whatever it might be. You might be able to throw to a spot and try to get there. Coverage assignments. Know your job in pass coverage with an on-screen real-time UI system informing you of your coverage assignment and pass defense. I don't really know what that's referring to necessarily. It might be the player that you're controlling specifically. When I saw coverage assignment, I was hoping that would mean that you can assign a your number one corner to follow a certain wide receiver or something like that, which we've needed for a while. Hopefully that's in too. There's also coach adjustments, customized AI to fit your game plan and make situational changes to strategy on the fly. We don't have a lot to go on with these. We'll have to see them in the context of the actual games being played and what EA actually has in mind with these things. But Chris, anything there stand out to you that you like the sound of the most?
Well, coverage assignment, like you said, I hope that involves being able to assign a quarterback or cornerback one to wide receiver one. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. Target passing is their answer to, hey, guess what? If you overthrow the ball, it's no longer on the CPU. It's on you.
Good.
Again, one step closer to making everything in competitive game style user controlled. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is arcade simulation and competitive. The simulation
You're getting ahead of us here.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. No,
we'll get to play styles in just a moment. But
honestly, and the coach adjustments, the thing that I hope shows up in coach adjustments is maybe like a two running back system, like those kind of strategies. If you have two quarterbacks that are like around the same rating, mm-hmm. and the one's not performing well, pull him. I don't think it's going to go that far, but it does sound like customize the AI to fit your game plan and make situational changes, like situational changes to strategy by the AI, makes it sound like there's going to be some kind of organic, and I hate to use that word in gaming, but like organic way of an AI coach acting like an actual human coach in the NFL.
Making adjustments, you mean?
Yeah, like actually. I would hope, but I think that's a pipe dream, but it's a pipe dream I hope comes to fruition, because that would actually be, there's not a lot of, to talk about with franchise mode. They didn't release a lot about it. So mm-hmm. I think if they could do those fixes, that may be more important to franchise mode than making actual updates in franchise mode.
Yeah. Well, you went into play styles, started to there for a second. Let's talk about that, because that's a big deal with Madden 18, and it's something that I've seen a lot of people ask for off and on over the years, which is, look, these developers have to balance their games to appeal to as wide an audience as possible. So it can't be too simulation-based, it can't be too arcadey. They have to kind of find a place in the middle that can satisfy the most people possible. It's an impossible thing to do, because you're going to hit a sweet spot, yes, but then there's going to be people on the outside who wish the game played differently. And so EA's solution to that is what they're calling play styles. And what they're doing is they have three different play styles: arcade, simulation, and competitive, that based on what you choose, you're going to get a different type of experience. And arcade is going to be, it says it's going to be filled with spectacular plays and scoring with pretty much no penalties, I would assume. Simulation, true to team and player ratings and authentic rules and gameplay. That's going to be the default in franchise mode. And then there's competitive, which is all about stick skills. They're trying to take out the randomness there in competitive games, and that's going to be for their tournaments, their esports, and for online games. Rich, where do you fall in a play style? What do you like? Because I know you like simulation, but you don't like penalties, which makes you an arcadey or competitive player, Rich.
Well, I mean, I completely understand what they're doing here, and it makes complete sense to me, because we know that EA is really investing heavily in promoting esports. And the Madden Challenge, which I think the most recent one just wrapped up very recently. So having a competitive setting makes complete sense. And then having the simulation setting, which is technically speaking, I'm sure for people like me, where I enjoy playing with a certain level of realism, mm-hmm. but I'm not a whiz with the sticks. And then, of course, arcade, which we presume is for the newcomers and the younger crowd. So I completely understand all three. I like all three. All that needs to be done is you take the simulation and then you turn off penalties, and then you're probably exactly where you need to be.
Chris, I know you posted on Twitter some thoughts on this, including how it affects competitive gaming. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. And we might debate this a little bit and whether it's the best route to take as far as that goes.
Me arguing on Twitter? No, it's never happened.
Yeah, I've seen it. I saved the tweet. I screenshotted it because you just will delete it later.
Yeah, right. So for competitive gaming, and this has been a recent revelation for me, like within the last couple of weeks, for competitive gaming in terms of esports, I think the more stick skills and less randomness is better. And the reason I think that is, when you talk about esports in general, and I'm not just talking about sports games, I'm talking about League of Legends, I'm talking about people that watch fighting games, the randomness is completely, well, I won't say completely, almost completely taken out of those games. The draw of the esport is, well, your initial draw is whatever game you're playing. So most people will tune into Madden because it's Madden. But the way you keep those players there is you give them a reason to like the gamer, not the game. So, and the two ways you like a gamer is either by his personality, which isn't always easy with gamers, or his stick skills. If he's really good at what he does, people will flock to him or her. I apologize. So that's what the Madden Championship was about. Even the championship was Problem Right and Skimbo, two of the top stick skill guys playing back and forth. But the thing is, so like, let's say Problem has, and I'm going to just use an example here, or a hypothetical example. Let's say he's down five and he throws to Randy Moss in the end zone with no one within 5 feet of him. In a simulation type game, there's a chance that that Randy Moss, which Problem not only picked the right play, but made sure it was the right coverage he threw against, and it did everything right. If Rat Randy Moss drops that ball, then the whole competitive gaming part of it's gone. Mm-hmm. There's no reason. I'm talking about Randy Moss. I'm not talking about Chris Ivory on a wheel route. Because there was a drop ball in the Madden Championship by Chris Ivory that was argued, but Ivory's got like a 50 catch. I'm talking about a 90-plus catch wide open in a competitive gaming, not in like a franchise game. So I'm in a competitive gaming mode where there's $100,000 on the line. And the problem is not the gamers in this point. The problem is that all the people watching that are immediately going to, in real life, they would be able to argue that the player sucked, the player lost focus. In real life, a penalty can be blamed on the referee. In esports, the argument goes right back to this game is trash. This game, this game. Well, I'm sorry. That's what happens is the game caused that to happen. So now you have viewers mad at the game and they lost all link with anything else going on other than saying, you know, and it happened in the Madden Championship game. Rex, your game is trash. If something happens that the game caused, not the gamer.
Yeah, well, look, Twitch chat, they're going to find a way to say that no matter what.
Right, but I don't think it's just Twitch chat. I think that, I mean, like, if I was watching a game like that and I saw someone drop a ball in a competitive game like that with a 90-plus catch rating, as much of a sim gamer as I am, I would sit there and go, man, he did everything right and it still didn't work. That might be realistic, okay. But I don't know.
So let me tell you why I disagree. And I understand where you're coming from there. And especially from the standpoint of a viewer watching and how they perceive the video game. But if you strip all the randomness out, and I mean all of it, which is basically what they're looking at doing, to me, the game becomes too vanilla, it becomes too sterile and too predictable. And this randomness is a part of sports. No player is perfect. Randy Moss he's dropped balls. A lot of it depends on, of course, the player ratings and everything, but the player ratings have to play a role. Otherwise, why not just give everybody 99 rated players and everything, and then you can find out who's really the best, right? To me, the interest in watching these games potentially isn't about well, did the game execute perfectly? It's about the drama of the games. And I watched some of those esports matchups, and it was about the drama of, you know, fourth quarters, coming down to a final play, big turnovers. It's about that stuff. That's the story to me of those games. And it's about overcoming challenges. I don't want to watch a game where nobody, there's no turnovers or there's no drop passes and everybody catches everything. Every kick is good. Every tackle is made. I mean, like, to me, the interest, and it's the same for when I'm playing these games, the interest isn't in everything executing perfectly every time. It's in, man, I dropped that pass. Well, now it's third down. Now let me do it now. And it becomes more dramatic when you overcome those issues. And look, you say everyone's going to rip on the game if somebody, if Moss drops that catch. Well, everybody was ripping on the game anytime there was a fumble, Chris. Do you want to take out fumbles too, or are we not? We're not
no, but
care
see,
about fumble ratings. Like, there's always got to be some randomness, or else, you know, there, or else it's just, you know, just perfection all the way down. And to me, that's not proving who's the better player.
But see, that's, it's not just perfection. There's ratings in the game, so ratings are still going to have a part of that. And I used Moss for the reason of having a high catch rating. If you're talking about like a 70 catch guy, then yeah, that ball should be, that ball has to have a chance of being dropped. I'm not talking about it always being perfect. I'm talking about if, so, and I'll use, let me use MLB as an example, because this was another example I used on Twitter. If you center green a fastball in MLB, and with perfect timing, and I'm talking about everything perfect, I think it should be a hit. Mm-hmm. Now, if everything's perfect, now if you were off by even, and my example that I used to somebody I was talking about was, let's say there's a dot in the middle of the PCI that's the same size as the ball. If the ball completely covers the dot, that's a base hit. But if even a little bit of that dot shows, then that's where you get your RNG. Your rating goes from there. The way competitive is being touted in this description, you get bigger rewards and bigger penalties for stick skills. So your hit stick, it's not a guaranteed fumble, but you're going, if you hit stick somebody, you have a better chance of causing a fumble than you would getting a big hit in the simulation mode. And that's what I mean, is that user stick skills, while, again, it doesn't have to be perfect. If everything is perfect, you have to have a perfect scenario. You have to start from some kind of baseline perfect. So if it's a 99 catch guy and the ball is right in his hands and you use the conservative catch, that should be a catch every time. Everything past that, yes, there should be some kind of RNG, some kind of random rating put into there with larger rewards for stick skills. But it, let's say that Moss now you didn't take control of and you let the computer try to do that, then you should get a larger penalty because you didn't use your user stick skills. And again, this is specifically for online head-to-head play. I'm not talking about for franchise mode.
Right. There's also a trade-off, like you said, hit stick. If you go for a hit stick, there's a larger chance you're also going to miss a tackle and then complain about that.
No, exactly. But even that's what you mean with the bigger penalties. Like, if you use or something for a bigger penalty, I agree with that.
So the other thing I would say is, in Madden's case, the reason why everyone expects perfection from a lot of these players, like Moss, you saw everybody with Moss, I think, in that tournament, is because they use salary cap mode for some of these tournaments, including, I believe, this last one, the championship one. And people stack their skill positions. Let's just talk about offense here, because they don't put anything into the offensive line right now. If offensive line mattered, then maybe you'd have lower rated players on the outside who you could more understand dropping the ball, or you know you have to distribute your strengths differently. And I think right now, just the lack of offensive line, everybody had 60 rated offensive linemen and it sure didn't seem to matter. So I think that's just one specific flaw I'm talking about here. But as far as the play styles go, I'm not sure this is the right answer. I think it's good in a sense that it's going to give people options to how they want to play, but I'm not sold on this being the way that competitive Madden kind of grows and becomes more popular. I'm not sure that it's going to make the games more fun to watch, personally.
I think it grows the viewership, but I don't think it grows the participation. And there's the flaw.
Doesn't that eliminate more people from feeling like they could ever even compete? Because part of online is, even if you're really good, part of online play is that even if you're fantastic at Madden, if you're one of the best players in the world, you're not going to win every game. You're sometimes going to get upset. And I think what you're doing here is you're kind of taking the potential for upsets out also.
Well, I think the upsets happen from somebody out strategizing or out user stick skilling somebody. Well, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the one thing that I saw come up on Twitter this week with this is, well, what about the people that want to play simulation style online? And there's a large group of people that, like, they're mostly CFM guys or like the MBL, like the guys that run big time leagues. Well, they want to try their hand online, but they don't want to run competitive. They would rather run simulation. And I think these guys think this simulation is going to be a little more than what it will be. And that's one of the things everyone should take a step back is when it says simulation, it's still going to be Madden.
Right.
Like, I don't think just because it says simulation, all it is going to be increasing the dice rolls on penalties and randomized things. I don't think it's going to be, when it comes to actual play style, I don't think it's going to be that much different. I really don't.
Yeah, Rich, do you have any thoughts on this?
Nope. Other than I think it's going to be a good attempt at trying to reach a broader audience. But there's clearly going to be a lot of debate. And the other thing we know is, no matter what it is when it launches, it'll all be tweaked multiple times over the course of the first 4 weeks and the next 4 weeks and the next 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So that there'll be a ton of modifications and sliders and adjustments happening the whole time.
So just looking at the poll results again, I was surprised Playstyles was second to last place out of everything. It only got 6%, just over 6% of the vote. I don't know if it's just not something that's going to get people really pumped up months out in advance, a different type, a different balance to the gameplay, depending on what you choose. But it's not something really we're seeing much excitement out of at this point. We'll just, again, like you said, Rich, we're going to have to see how it comes out of the box, how people accept it, and then what they do with as far as patching and tuning updates to adjust that. As far as the poll results go, those gameplay improvements we talked about that we don't know a whole lot about, that got 18%. Possible return of online team play got just under 10%. And then coming up in last place by far, Play Now Live with under 3%. And that is basically what you've seen in other sports games where they keep up to date with records and stats, and then you can pick up and play that weekend's games in Madden now, or pick up and play that weekend's games and then continue on in a franchise starting from that point instead. Do you guys have interest in that? I never really thought that would make a whole lot of sense for Madden, just because it's a 16-game season as opposed to baseball 162, basketball 82. You know, like there's so many games in those other sports that you want the ability to pick up from the season and take on from there. And in Madden, with a 3-month regular season and only 16 games, I'm not sure if it's going to get as much use.
You know, football is such an event that I actually think if it were implemented a certain way, it would be much better. So what I mean is, the whole play it live today is based solely on the fact that we're in the middle of the season. And granted, for the first 8 months after release, that's the case. But then once the season is over, that entire mode sort of ceases to have any usefulness to it. The other problem with sort of the play now with the live rosters is that there's no persistency. It's not part of anything else that you're doing. It's just sort of a one and done. So, yes, it's fun in the moment, but you're not really contributing to your franchise or to your ultimate team or to really anything. Mm-hmm. So that I think is another reason that it doesn't seem to hit the mark for lots of people. What would be interesting in the NFL is not only to have it be a live mode, but because the course of a 17-week, 16-game season, the NFL is such a roller coaster, because at various points during the season, certain injuries happen and certain teams get better and certain teams get worse. Mm-hmm. What would be more interesting to me, instead of being able to play live today, would be able to sort of do a flashback to, as the season goes on, be able to go back to week one or week three or week five with the teams as they were at that point and then play them then. So as the season goes on, you have a bunch of those different points, those games that you could play with the teams as they were at that point, and then perhaps pick them up and move forward or not. But at least just that to me makes it more compelling, you know, because, like, for example, I'm an Eagles fan, and last year the Eagles were doing really well, and then they were winning very late in like the fifth or the sixth game of the season in Detroit. They were, I think, 3-1 or 4-1, and they had the game locked up and fumbled very late in the game when they were literally running out the clock, and Detroit scooped it up and then kicked a game-winning field goal, and the entire season spiraled down right after that.
Yeah.
And it would be so great to be able to go back to that game and win it and play it forward and see what would happen.
Is that something, as an Eagles fan, you would have to do pretty often, Rich, go back to the start of the season to have a successful year?
I don't like you, Brian.
Yeah. Okay. How about we switch gears here and talk a little pro evolution, Rich?
I'm happy to talk about pro evolution.
This is a game that we both really liked last year. I don't know where you stand on pro evolution, Chris. I don't remember if we've had discussions on that with you. But we got the first news on pro evolution 2018. It's going to be more coming up at E3, but there's quite a bit here to chew on. I'm going to run through a few quick things, and we'll hear some thoughts on what they've rolled out. Gameplay wise, they're touting some strategic dribbling for more control. Real Touch Plus adding dimension to ball control, new set pieces, free kick and penalty kick systems, a lot of visual stuff in the way of a brand new animation system. They motion captured within realistic environments now, so they've done a lot of work there. True-to-life stadium lighting and things of that nature. They're adding in an online co-op, 2v2 or 3v3. They are bringing back what's called random selection match, which I believe was a popular way to play in the PS2 days, and then it was removed, and now it's back. So that's good for fans of that. Some presentation upgrades in the menus and player images, and for people who play on PC, a big deal, they're upgrading the PC version, which was kind of a last gen version, and now they're bringing that up, kind of catching up in that regard. So, Rich, start us out. What are you excited about with Pro Evolution Soccer, which releases in mid-September when about 30 other sports games release?
So it's not hyperbole for me to say that Pro Evolution Soccer 2017 was the best controlling sports video game I've ever played. Mm. It was. I have never felt more comfortable playing a sports game than I did last year's Pro Evo. I just got to learn the controls, and they were so responsive, and I just knew what I was doing more in that game than ever. And it's not because I poured hundreds of hours into it learning it. I poured hundreds of hours into it because I loved it, because it played so well. So, I mean, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, that was my go-to game every night.
You talked about it on the podcast a few times.
I mean, it was a long time. So, to be completely frank, I'm a little worried because we've seen attempts at control overhauls before, and it doesn't always work in your favor. So there's no reason for me to be concerned. I mean, number one, Pro Evolution is not an EA sports game. It's not a Take-Two game. This is made by Konami, which has mostly gotten out of the traditional console video game business. Mm-hmm. So it should not be overlooked that fans of this franchise should be delighted that this game is even going to exist. The fact that it exists and the fact that it appears to be being well supported, to me, translates into the assumption that it is doing well financially. It's not just profitable, but it's probably more than a little profitable. And I'm sure that the reason it's more than a little profitable is because of the combination of the fact that they don't have to pay for tremendous licenses, and they've got a similar mode to Ultimate Team that's generating revenue. So that's a great thing. Just the fact this game exists, again, should not be overstated. Having said that, I'm incredibly excited because the things that I love about it are supposed to get better. The Master League is supposed to have an improved and more streamlined transfer market, for example, and it's supposed to have sort of a little bit more personality in the clubhouse, which I could see as somewhat interesting because unlike a number of sports, football, international football, personalities play a bigger role. Obviously, they do in the NBA. My goodness. I mean, who are we talking about? But to me, they don't really sort of influence when I'm playing in my league or something like that, and nearly as much as they do in international football. So, you know, with all of those things being said, as long as it continues to control beautifully, I'm all in. If for whatever reason, you know, the changes and adjustments they make sort of break it for me, like has happened in the past with FIFA, you know, that would be my only concern. I don't think that's going to happen because of the track record. I mean, I've been a Pro Evo, a real Pro Evo fan for about 3 years now. This will be my fourth in a row where I was really deep into it. So I have no reason. They've given no indication that that's a concern. But again, I mean, it's an annual sports game, and at a certain point in time, sometimes you don't have to change certain things. And I just loved how the game plays so much. I almost have a little bit of like, I hope they don't change it too much, because if they do, it won't be the best controlling sports game anymore.
So Pro Evolution really has two weaknesses, right? It's the licenses and the game modes, the depth of modes, the depth of content. Gameplay, it's fantastic, probably, or arguably, the best playing sports game. But some people can't get over the limited types of modes. It doesn't have a story mode, for example. It's fairly weak with its online suite of modes. And the missing licenses. And so there's only so much they can do about the licenses. So many of them are going to be exclusive to FIFA. I think what I see here is not a whole lot of building out the modes, but you see that they're trying to do that as far as bringing in an online co-op mode, bringing back random selection match, working more within the Master League. They're trying to do some of that, what they can, with probably more limited resources than EA has to with FIFA. So I recognize that, and it'll be interesting to see whether they can kind of flesh out the game a little better, because that's really what holds it back. When I wrote my review last year, it was, if you can get over the fact that it's missing licenses and doesn't have all the same modes that FIFA does, you know, you'll be extremely satisfied with the game.
I'm with you on the licenses. It's definitely a more crisp and believable experience when you're playing FIFA than when you're playing Pro Evo when it comes to the presentation and the kits and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The modes, though, Pro Evo is pretty deep. I mean, you've got multiple online modes, including their version of Ultimate Team and their version of Seasons, or, you know, whatever it's called, PES League. Mm-hmm. You've obviously got Master League, which I played four complete campaigns of, which is very deep. And mm-hmm. there's a lot going on, not just managing the team, but also the different competitions and buying and selling players and setting up your scouting networks and
looking for different sorts of players and managing your youth league and managing the finances. Like, it's super deep. And then there's a single player mode where you can be the one person sort of on the pitch, you know, and you can go through that whole single player mode. It's not a story mode, but there is that, which we know, for example, Sumit Sarkar, longtime friend of the show, talks about that's the only mode that he plays.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to just sell. I mean, FIFA has a couple more extra modes other than that, but I don't know. I just, the way you said it, I'm like, oh, you know, it's not like there's only one way to play Pro Evo. There's like legit ways to play Pro Evo.
Absolutely. Millennium, you got anything you want to mention as far as Pro Evolution goes?
Yeah, real quick. First of all, thank you to Rich, because Rich is the reason I'm playing PES.
Oh, this is cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't give PES a second thought until Rich started talking about it and his joy for it on the Press Row podcast. So I went through, played it on PS4, went through putting all the kits and everything. And I'll tell you right now, the biggest roadblock that I think PES has is how difficult it is to put kits. Like, that's fine. You don't have licenses, that's fine. But you have to find an easier way to be able to do that, to make realistic teams and stuff like that. And the fact you can't even do that on Xbox One.
Right.
So there's literally no draw outside of gameplay itself to get PES on the Xbox One. And unfortunately, the way you get casual sports gamers is they have to be able to follow their favorite players or favorite teams. So that's if they find some way to like have like a community share, maybe almost like the EA games do in terms of files, where you don't have to take like a USB stick. I think that would be a huge step for them in terms of growing their fan base to be able to add people in and saying, hey, you know what? You might not be able to, because look at NCAA football. I mean, granted, it's college football. It's a different animal. But the ability to download rosters from that extends that game and extends the fan base for that game every year. So
you are completely right. You are right in every sense of the word. I think they're already walking a fine line with allowing people to edit. You know the reason that they can't edit on the Xbox One? It ain't a technical reason, right? It's not like the Xbox One can't handle that. It's clearly some sort of a issue that Microsoft has with it. They're already really flirting hard with violating EA's licenses as it is by allowing the editing. I think they're just, they really have to be very careful, because they've got a pretty darn good business model working. And I kind of get the sense that they're, and to be completely transparent, it's almost like what we're doing, right? Like, we don't have an out of the park, the kind of resources that a bunch of the big publishers have, but we do establish very strong partnerships with very specific franchises, like Out of the Park did with the Trenton Thunder this year, right? They're the Yankees AA club. They're a really amazing long-term franchise that has won multiple championships and produced Hall of Famers. And they know who we are, and we know who they are, and we've established a very close partnership that looks like it's benefiting them and us. Same kind of thing with Pro Evo. Like, they can't possibly compete with the licenses of EA, so what they're doing is they're partnering with Barcelona, which, by the way, happens to be the world's biggest football club. You know what I mean? That ain't the Trenton Thunder. That's Barcelona. They win Champion League titles and La Liga titles and have the best players in the world on them. I really think that's a great strategy, but they have to be very careful, because they're really skirting the edge of a lot of licenses. That's why I guarantee you they would make it easier, I think, if they possibly could.
Hmm.
I don't think they really can. I think they got to sort of make it as tough as they can while being reasonable partners to their fans, as well as not getting just shut down by EA. That's a really tough spot they're in.
I will say that the more and more people that get their hands on Pro Evo realize that it's a far superior gameplay-wise to FIFA.
It's not close. Yeah. It ain't close, dude. It's so much better than FIFA. It just is.
Yes. It's unfortunate that so many people don't recognize that Necessarily, but you know, a lot of people love FIFA. They're comfortable with it, and that's fine too. And it's got, like I said, it's got a story mode and all that, which might be a little more accommodating for a lot of people.
Well, and they're making another Pro Evo. That's what I said. Like, the good thing is, got another one coming next year. This is a year-to-year business, so good.
What do you think?
This is all good.
Rich, what do you think they're putting out for the first time, a Pro Evolution mobile game? Do you think that is an indication that they're going to drop the console game in the next year or two and go full on mobile, or is that just accompanying the brand and extending the brand?
Just
real quick, give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I my heart desperately hopes that it is a brand extension thing, and the fact that, you know, the phones that we carry in our pockets now are pretty close to being able to run games that were 360/PS3 era games.
And this specifically said it uses the same game engine, which of course tailored to mobile. But yeah,
I think if I'm in their situation, I'm looking to extend my brand. Like, I don't want to make games that are specifically for a PS4 that are different from the mobile, that are different from the PC. Like, if it's up to me, I'm making a game that anybody can get to from any device that shares the same common universe and the same common player base. Yes, if I'm on a PS4, I might be able to experience it a certain way than I can if I'm on my phone, but I'm still tied to a single universe and network of players and teams and history. So I'm hoping that's what they're going for. That might be too big for them. They might not sort of have the same kind of big dreams that I do, but that's what I would do, and that's what I hope they're doing.
Okay. Let's hit on one more topic here quickly at the end of the show. We have a new game announcement, which is always fun. It's not coming till 2018, but it's the return of a sport that's been absent for, it'll have been 6 years by the time this game comes out. And we're getting tennis back. It's a game called Tennis World Tour. It's going to have over 30 licensed tennis stars. It's coming from a studio that I believe is new, but does have some people who worked on the Top Spin series in the past. It's a simulation game, which is encouraging also to hear that. And it's going to be out on Xbox One, PS4, PC, again, in 2018. Rich, what was your reaction to... This is the first tennis game since 2012. Like I said, that was Grand Slam Tennis 2. In 2011, there was Top Spin 4 and Virtua Tennis 4, but nothing since then, Rich.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm delighted. And I am dubious. So, number one, I'm surprised because it has been quite some time since we've seen a tennis game. And for all of the conversations we have about the companies that publish video games, they tend to be pretty smart. They tend to have a good idea what the audience wants and what their customers will purchase. So the fact we hadn't seen a tennis game in several years told me that all of their research indicated that there just wasn't a market for it. So, surprised to see a new tennis game announced. Delighted because I love sports video games. I love tennis games. I mean, we've all had great experiences playing tennis games across different platforms. Top Spin, Virtua Tennis, and a whole bunch of others, right? So, I mean, who doesn't love a good tennis game? So, clear delight out of that. You know, we're getting a new tennis game on HD, our modern consoles. That's awesome. And dubious because, man, it's not easy. Boy, I sound like a broken record. It's not easy to make tennis fun, especially in our simulation. I think like the marketing text for this went kind of heavy on the fact that this is a simulation kind of a tennis game. And if you watch modern tennis, there's long rallies and you know, 15, 20, you know, back and forth to get one point of a long match. And yes, video game tennis has always been sort of went really, really lenient on, you know, the quote unquote simulation level of the number of games and matches you had to play and stuff. But regardless, like when you're going heavy on the word simulation with tennis, that sort of makes me think like, boy, from a control perspective, if they get super complex and complicated, that can be difficult. And then from a, you know, sort of scoring and stuff. So, you know, a lot of emotions. I'm happy because who doesn't want more games? I'm surprised because I didn't think there was a market for it. And I'm definitely sort of curious how they're going to put this together in a way that will appeal to enough people to make it a worthwhile business venture.
Yeah, and like you said, as far as the business side of it goes, Rich, the reason why we haven't seen a tennis game is because of the cost of development. And this is the same issue you see with boxing, which is that there is no overarching license that you can get that in which you secure every individual and all venues and all branded tournaments and awards and all those, everything that comes with a license like you get with the UFC, where you get everything. You don't get that in tennis. You don't get it in boxing. And that makes it very difficult to not only pay for the development of the game, but also then, well, who are we going to sign individually? How much is that going to cost? Which Grand Slam tournaments? Remember, EA's Grand Slam Tennis was it the first one to ever have all four Grand Slam events?
It was.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was the first time ever, and that was like 2009 or 10.
And by the way, it only lasted one iteration.
Two. There was a sequel.
Yeah, but it wasn't on the same number of platforms.
Right. Okay, so that kind of explains why we're here with it, why it disappeared. It is funny that it went from three plus games and then, you know, you had Mario Tennis, those kind of things mixed in there, to nothing overnight almost. But we saw that with a lot of games that weren't necessarily the big three or big four sports in North America and around the world. Chris, were you surprised to see tennis making a comeback right now?
I'm extremely surprised, especially since tennis as a whole right now is at a low point, like in terms of having stars worldwide. Right. Federer isn't Federer's kind of there still. I mean, they don't really have that.
Federer and Nadal are still there. I think Federer got to the finals of his last, the most recent major, and Nadal and he are still, shockingly, have got a great thing going. But you're right. But I just want to mention Federer and Nadal are like somehow magically back at the top of the chain.
Right, and that's because they don't really have anyone else around them. And that's kind of what I was going for. Like, Federer's 35 at this point. Like, Djokovic isn't what he used to be. Andy Murray never really came to where he, you know, went to where, like, Sampras and those kind of guys were. I mean, this isn't Sampras, Agassi, those kind of years where – and even the Williams sisters. The Williams sisters were the draw for the women's side. It's just not as popular as it used to be. It's kind of in the same spot that boxing is, unfortunately, where boxing just doesn't have those stars that draw people in anymore. I'm extremely excited for the game. I'm very happy. Topspin was one of my favorite games. I even played it well past its life cycle. I'm really worried that this is going to be a one and done because it's like you said, it costs a lot of money to develop a game these days. And if you're going Ultra Sim, and from the screenshots that were shown, I mean, it looks like it's going to be a pretty good looking game. I just don't know how it's going to sell. There's a reason EA, there's a reason 2K, there's a reason those guys haven't gotten back into the tennis game. And it's because I don't know that it's going to sell.
And you can't, you know, how are other games surviving? Ultimate Team type modes. Not really going to work in a tennis game. And it's just like it doesn't really – EA tried it in UFC. Doesn't really work there. That's why you can't see it in a boxing game. They have to find some other revenue source. And this is why also you're going to see an independent studio, inexperienced studios, as the only ones maybe who are trying to take a chance on these type of games or arcade games or anything that the big publishers have decided aren't worth it anymore. But it is an interesting development. Doesn't look like we're going to be getting – much more on this game until late August. It's going to be at Gamescom in some capacity. More information coming then. So we'll follow that as it develops. I think that'll do it for this episode. Thank you, Mr. Rich Grisham, Out of the Park Developments, and Hit the Pass. And thank you, Chris Millennium OS, who comes from Operation Sports, obviously, but also streams on Twitch very often. What's your Twitch name there, Chris?
Oh, it's under the Operation Sports Switch.
Right. Okay. So that's where you can find that, streaming pretty often. So check that out. And thank you again. I'm Brian Weed Eye Pasta Padre. Appreciate you listening to this episode and any other episodes. We're always happy to have you along with us, and we will be back with another episode next week. Take care. Till then.